From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Another whistleblower came forward in the Trump-Ukraine story, and this happened over the weekend when many members of Congress were back in their home districts for a two-week recess. Let's start the hour with D.C. congressional reporter for McClatchy, Kate Irby. She's joining us by phone from Washington, D.C. Still there, you are, Kate. Good morning.
Hi there.
So tell me how the news is moving today regarding the second whistleblower.
So it's definitely pretty crazy in D.C. You know, you've got this this drip where every single thing is like coming out and it's happening quickly. So second whistleblower is obviously an example of that. Now it's not just one, it's at least two. And the lawyers are also saying that they just say that they would now represent multiple whistleblowers. So they're not even limiting it to just two. So we will probably be hearing more about this as time goes on.
I know you don't really know the answer to this, but it's worth asking how the identities of the whistleblowers have stayed secret in a city where it seems that nothing stays secret for long.
Well, I mean, I think the intelligence committee or intelligence community hopefully knows how to keep the secret better than most people in D.C. And obviously, Democrats want to keep this under wraps. They don't want any retaliation. And hopefully Republicans feel that way about the actual whistleblower process as well. Even if some of them feel that this is partisan, there's still a lot of hope in the whistleblower system generally that needs to be preserved.
Some key members of the California delegation are at the center in the spotlight of the impeachment inquiry, Nancy Pelosi, and the investigation into the whistleblower case, Adam Schiff. Tell me about the communication between them and the rest of the delegation. What's the reaction to the intensity of the positions they've taken and the words they've been speaking lately?
So as of now, I think Speaker Pelosi is trying to handle this by not having regular members go on the record yet. Republicans have been pushing this narrative that the House needs to take a vote first just to authorize the impeachment inquiry, and that Speaker Pelosi has not done that. That's likely because Speaker Pelosi does not want her members going on the record as supporting impeachment until they know exactly what the allegations are. So that's how she's kind of been protecting her, especially her purple district, people like Representative Hart or Representative Cox in California. Most Californians, even purple district ones of the delegation, came out supporting at least an impeachment inquiry, if not an impeachment vote, the day that impeachment was announced. So it seems like generally they're all supportive of this and that they're moving in a way that they're hoping to cut down on any political implications.
What's the reaction been to Adam Schiff and his handling of the committee hearing, which was watched across the country, but within the California delegation, what are you hearing?
So, you know, you have a lot of Republicans going after Representative Schiff, particularly Representative Nunes, who's in California, obviously, about his what so-called parody in that committee hearing. Representative Schiff took the call, and he was kind of imitating Trump's style, but he was saying things that were not actually in the Ukraine call, and then later said it was a parody, or his staff said it was a parody. Republicans really went after him on that. Representative Nunes has said that's no way to be conducting an investigation, and that's basically lying about what was going on in the conversation. But Representative Nunes has also gone back and forth on criticizing Representative Schiff about this should be public. Oh, no, this should be private. No, this should be public again. So the problem for Representative Schiff is obviously every single move he makes is going to be highly scrutinized, especially by Republicans. And so any little misstep that happens, then he is going to get reamed over.
Kate, you have a story in the Fresno Bee that was published last week about Devin Nunes, and you wrote, Nunes has long been one of Trump's closest allies in Congress and served on Trump's presidential transition team after the 2016 election. Talk about how he's been defending the president during this time of the impeachment inquiry.
So Representative Nunes is a frequent appearance on Fox News, especially Fox News commentator shows, which if your listeners don't know, those are very, very highly watched, like Hannity, Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham. And these are commentators who say that they, you know, they are conservative. They are not going to push conservative appearances like Representative Nunes by challenging their assertions. They're going to mostly agree with them and further the Republican stance. So generally, Representative Nunes has been going on those types of shows, criticizing Representative Schiff, saying that this is the Russia hoax 2.0, that Democrats are just desperate to impeach Trump and they're trying to use anything that they can to get there. And trying to also poke holes in the investigation itself, questioning the integrity of the investigators, the integrity of the whistleblower complaint process, anything he can to kind of sow some doubt among fellow Republicans that this impeachment inquiry is anything but legitimate.
I need a basic civics lesson here, Kate. So Nunes was a member of the majority party and in charge of the House Intelligence Committee. He's now a member of the minority party. If he was still in charge and Republicans were in the majority, would there have been choice about convening the committee meeting we saw last week? Is there enough pressure that that would have had to happen beyond any partisanship in the decision?
It might have still happened. That there obviously would have been some pressure. It's hard to say in this current political environment, though. You've had Republicans who have really circled the wagons kind of around Trump and have a lot of them, including Representative McCarthy, who is now the minority leader and would have possibly been the speaker if Republicans had the majority. He's been a pretty vociferous ally to Trump. So you might have still had the hearing. It almost certainly would not have been anything to do with actual impeachment. There just might have still been an investigation into this whistleblower complaint. It also could be conducted very differently because when you are in the majority party, you have subpoena power, whereas the minority party does not. So Democrats have already subpoenaed the White House. They've made it clear that they're not waiting on these types of things. They're going to play ball. And you could pretty much guarantee that Republicans would not have taken that step.
I'm talking with Kate Irby. She covers the California congressional delegation from Washington, D.C. for McClatchy. Any other conversations that you've had with members of the California delegation? And you mentioned Representative Cox, and I'm just wondering about the pacing there in deciding to support an impeachment inquiry.
Sure. So Representative Cox was, I believe, the last one in the California delegation to sign on to the impeachment inquiry. And he actually waited until after Speaker Pelosi said that it was happening before he came out and said that he supported it. And he's probably one of the, if not the most at-risk Democrat in California. He is one of them. For listeners of yours that don't know, he only won by less than 1,000 votes, and he actually didn't even know for sure that he had won until months after the election. So he's being very, very cautious in how he handles this. He's in a purple district. He doesn't want to alienate independent voters. So we'll see how this progresses from here. Right now, he and other members who are being more cautious only say that they support an inquiry, whereas other members have already said, you know, if these allegations are true, I support a vote. I want to vote on impeachment. So if you hear the word inquiry, that they support the investigation of the inquiry, those are the people who are generally being a little bit more cautious.
Any names to put in that cautious category?
Like I said, Representative Cox. I believe Representative Cisneros is in the same one. He's also a freshman Democrat who was new over to that. But basically, like any purple district Democrats, Representative Katie Hill, things like that, they are a little bit more cautious generally.
I've said a couple times that you cover the California delegation, but being so close, I know you keep your eye a little bit on what's happening in Nevada. Anything to add in there in terms of what you've observed?
So we have a representative over there who is a Republican who made some headlines last week because he said on a call that he we'll see what happens, he was saying, on the impeachment inquiry. You know, he didn't denounce it. He made it seem like he was going to wait and see what was going on in the actual investigation before he weighed in one way or the other. So he got some heat from that because you have Republicans who really are trying to stay together on messaging right now. There's been other reporting that has suggested, especially after Representative McCarthy made an appearance on 60 Minutes, where it was generally seen as just not a great performance, that he wasn't on message, his defense of President Trump was not convincing, and you've heard that Republicans are kind of struggling on what exactly their messaging should be right now. And I think that Nevada representative was an example of that, that they're just not completely unified on messaging at this moment.
Last week on this program, every day we approached this topic of California's state of resistance from different angles. And a press release was sent out late last week that California Senators Kamala Harris and Dianne Feinstein are asking the EPA's Inspector General to investigate the White House's role in the EPA's attacks on California and the city of San Francisco. How vivid is this idea, this atmosphere of this state's state of resistance?
I mean, yeah, it's basically been a constant back and forth between President Trump and his administration in the state of California. As you mentioned, we've seen that with the EPA. We saw it when President Trump came to California and all of a sudden was saying all these things about homelessness when he really hadn't weighed into the issue before. And you had people in California who are affordable housing advocates who disagreed with the way that he was characterizing the way to fix this problem. And now that he's back in impeachment, that seems to have faded a little bit. But he also called Governor Newsom do nothing in a press conference that was about impeachment. So it's continuous. It always seems to be going on. I'm sure it doesn't help that, as you've pointed out, Speaker Pelosi, Representative Adam Schiff, people who are running point on this impeachment investigation are all from California. So President Trump seems to increasingly think that California is more of a opponent than an ally, and he keeps going after them.
So one more question, Kate, and that is, we started this by making the point that members of Congress, those who aren't in those key roles, are back in their home districts. And I wonder what they're going to be hearing from people. I wonder whether impeachment inquiry is on top of mind or whether the discussions are going to be to health care or immigration or some of the other key issues that might directly impact their lives. What do you think?
Right. So I'm working on a story on that right now, actually. It seems that for the most part, and I haven't completely confirmed this yet, but for the most part, that these town halls are really not focused on impeachment. Democrats especially have really capitalized on this aspect of a town hall because when they unseated Republicans, those seven, like Representative Harder, Representative Cox, they always were talking about how they weren't having town halls. They weren't listening to their constituents. So Harder and Cox have made it kind of a staple of their offices that they're going to keep having town halls. And they're in their districts right now, as you pointed out. It doesn't sound like at these town halls impeachment has really been coming up very often, if at all. So, you know, people on the ground, you know, even though it's driving D.C. crazy and everyone's in a spin in D.C., on the ground, people, you know, they care about issues that affect their wallets. They care about health care. They care about jobs. They want to hear about these things from their representative more than they want to hear about impeachment.
All right, Kate, it's always a pleasure to start the week with you. This is a to-be-continued conversation for sure. So thanks for joining us from Washington, D.C.
Pleasure being here. Thank you.
That was Kate Irby, political reporter for McClatchy. Last week, I do want to add that in Nevada, CAP Radio reporter Bert Johnson had a moment to talk with former Vice President Joe Biden, who was on the campaign trail. We thought we'd share just a little bit of that conversation that did have to do specifically with the Trump-Ukraine case.
It's been an eventful 2 weeks for you. The U.S. House might investigate President Donald Trump for a call he made to the Ukrainian president asking to investigate you and your son. The president upped his rhetoric recently, calling you and your son crooks. How do you respond to that?
Everybody knows who Donald Trump is. And I don't have to respond to anything. There's not a single outlet in the world that I'm aware of that has done anything other than say there's not a single solitary thing either my son or I did wrong, number one. Number two, this is about Donald Trump. He's the one that has to answer the questions. So I'm not going to let him divert and try to make this about me. And there's no basis for anything he said.
That was Joe Biden talking last week with CAP Radio reporter Bert Johnson. Up next, you're going to hear my conversation with Tommy Orange. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.